Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into a case that's practically legendary in the legal world.
Oh, yeah.
INS v. Chadha.
Absolutely.
This case really shook things up.
Yeah.
It changed the balance of power between Congress and the president, and we're still feeling the effects of this case today.
It's a landmark decision for sure, and it all started with what seemed like a pretty straightforward immigration case.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
At the center of it all, we have Jagdish Rai Chadha,
right,
an East Indian man who overstayed his student visa and was facing deportation.
Yeah, and at first, things actually seemed to be going in Chadha's favor.
Okay.
He applied for a suspension of deportation, met all the requirements, and an immigration judge actually granted it.
So case closed, right?
Well, not quite. Congress had a little trick up their sleeve.
Okay.
Known as the legislative veto, and they decided to use it in Chadha's case.
The legislative veto.
Yeah.
I've heard whispers of this legal beast, but can you break it down for us? What exactly is it?
Sure. So it was this mechanism that let Congress basically overturn actions taken by the executive branch without having to go through the whole process of passing a new law.
Oh, interesting.
Kind of like a shortcut.
Uh-huh.
And it had been used for decades in over 200 statutes.
Wow. So instead of passing a whole new law, Congress could just kind of step in and be like, nope, we don't like what you did there. Executive branch. Seems efficient, but maybe a little too powerful.
Well, that's the question the Supreme Court had to wrestle with in INS v. Chadha.
Yeah.
Was this efficiency actually violating the Constitution's separation of powers?
Right, because at that point, it wasn't just about one man's deportation anymore.
No.
It was about the very structure of our government.
Absolutely.
So what happened when this case landed in the highest court in the land?
Well, the court had to decide if the legislative veto was giving Congress too much power.
Okay.
You know, was it allowing them to sidestep the checks and balances put in place by the Constitution?
Right.
And in a 7-2 decision, they decided that it did.
Wow. So they actually struck down the legislative veto, declared it unconstitutional.
They did.
That must have sent shockwaves through the legal system.
Definitely a major shakeup.
So Chief Justice Berger.
Yes.
Writing for the majority.
Uh-huh.
Argued that the legislative veto violated two key constitutional principles.
That's right.
The presentment clause and the principle of bicameralism.
Exactly.
Okay, break those down for us.
All right, so the presentment clause requires that every bill passed by Congress has to be presented to the president for their signature before it can become law.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, wasn't the legislative veto just a resolution?
Right.
Not like a full-blown bill.
That's a common misunderstanding.
Okay.
The court clarified that even resolutions, if they change legal rights, they have to go through the president.
Mm.
And in Chadha's case, that legislative veto directly impacted his legal status.
Right.
So it fell under that requirement.
Got it. So no bypassing the president.
Right.
Okay. What about this bicameralism principle?
So bicameralism means that for a law to be passed, it has to be approved by both the House of Representatives and the Senate.
Right.
The legislative veto, however, allowed a single chamber of Congress to basically make law without the Senate's input.
So it bypassed that whole checks and balances system that we have in place.
It did.
I bet Chief Justice Berger had some pretty strong words about that.
He did. He argued that the Constitution's lawmaking process, while it might seem clumsy and inefficient at times, is designed that way for a reason.
Okay.
To prevent any one branch from having too much power.
So it's like those childproof locks on medicine bottles.
Exactly.
They can be annoying, but they're there for a reason.
Right.
But I'm guessing not everyone on the court agreed with this strict interpretation of the Constitution.
You're right. There were dissenting voices. Justice White, for example, wrote a pretty passionate dissent arguing that the legislative veto was actually a vital tool for Congress to oversee the actions of the executive branch.
I can see his point. I mean, Congress delegates a lot of power to the executive branch, so they need some way to make sure that power isn't being abused.
Exactly. Justice White was concerned that getting rid of the legislative veto would really hamper Congress's ability to effectively oversee the executive branch and all those administrative agencies.
Yeah.
He even argued that the court was essentially reshaping our institutions with this decision.
Reshaping our institutions. Strong words.
Yeah.
So we have the majority opinion focusing on strictly following the Constitution.
Right.
And the dissent arguing for the practicality of the legislative veto.
Uh-huh.
Were there any other opinions that added to this debate?
There was a concurring opinion from Justice Powell
that
brought a new perspective to the table.
Right.
He agreed that the veto was unconstitutional.
Oh, okay.
But his reasoning was a bit different. He was primarily worried about Congress overstepping its boundaries by basically acting like a court.
Wait, Congress acting like a court?
Mm.
How did that play out in this case?
Well, Powell argued that by specifically vetoing the suspension of deportation for Chetta and five other individuals,
right,
Congress was making a judicial decision, denying them due process of law.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So in Powell's view, even if a legislative veto could theoretically be constitutional, it couldn't be used in a way that infringed on individual rights.
Exactly.
Wow. This case is full of fascinating legal nuances.
It is.
But before we get too deep into those, let's take a step back.
Okay.
What happened after the Supreme Court made this monumental decision?
Well, the fallout was significant.
Yeah.
Hundreds of statutes containing legislative veto provisions were suddenly in question.
Wow.
It was a massive shift in the legal landscape.
Yeah.
And Congress had to rethink its whole approach to overseeing the executive branch.
Talk about a legal earthquake.
It was.
It seems like INS v. Chadha created a real ripple effect throughout the government.
It did. And we're going to explore those ripples in more detail in the next part of our deep dive. We'll delve into how Chadha shifted the balance of power between Congress and the president and examine its lasting impact on administrative law.
Sounds good. Can't wait.
Stay with us.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. We've been exploring the ins and outs of INS v. Chadha.
Yeah.
A case that had huge implications for the balance of power in our government.
It's a case that really reminds us how even those tiny little procedural things in the law can have huge consequences.
Absolutely. And before the break, we were talking about how the Supreme Court struck down the legislative veto.
Right.
This tool that Congress had been using for decades to oversee the executive branch.
Yeah, and its demise sent shockwaves through the legal system, forcing Congress to completely rethink how it interacts with the executive branch and administrative agencies.
So it seems like Congress was left kind of scrambling, trying to figure out, okay, what do we do now?
Yeah.
I mean, do they just have to sit back and watch as the executive branch just kind of ran wild?
Well, not exactly. They still had ways to exert their influence, but those ways became more demanding and required more compromise.
Okay.
So one option was to write more specific and detailed guidelines for agencies.
Okay.
Leaving them less wiggle room for interpretation.
Ah, so instead of stepping in after the fact with a veto, Congress had to try to anticipate potential problems and just build safeguards right into the law itself.
Exactly.
But wouldn't that make the law, like, incredibly complex?
Oh, for sure.
And maybe even inflexible.
That's a valid concern. Overly prescriptive guidelines can be difficult to adapt to new situations,
right,
and could stifle innovation within agencies.
Right. It's all about finding that sweet spot between control and flexibility.
Absolutely.
So if tightly controlling agencies wasn't always the best approach, what other options did Congress have?
Well, the alternative was to pass new laws to address specific concerns.
Okay.
A process that's way more time consuming and often politically challenging.
Right. You got to build consensus, navigate all the legislative hurdles, and ultimately get this president on board.
Exactly.
So no more quick fixes. Congress had to go back to the drawing board and work within the Constitution's framework.
Right.
And I imagine this shift in approach had some pretty interesting consequences for the power dynamic between Congress and the president.
Definitely.
Good. So let's dig into that a bit. How did INS v. Chadha impact the relationship between those two branches of government?
Well, some people argue that it shifted the balance of power in favor of the president.
Okay.
You know, without the legislative veto, the president and the agencies under their control gained a degree of autonomy.
So less congressional oversight could mean more freedom for the president to act.
That's one interpretation.
Okay.
However, it's crucial to remember that Congress still retains significant power over the purse strings.
Ah, yes, the power of the purse. Congress controls the budget so they can use funding to influence agency actions.
Exactly. They can use appropriations to encourage specific actions, discourage others, or even withhold funding entirely if an agency isn't playing by the rules.
Right. It's a powerful lever.
Yeah.
So it's not a clear-cut win for the executive branch.
Right.
Chadha may have taken away one tool from Congress.
Right.
But they still have other ways to make their presence felt.
Absolutely.
It sounds a lot like a constant push and pull between these two branches of government.
You've hit the nail on the head. And this tension is at the heart of the ongoing debate about the so-called administrative state.
Right.
Some people believe that unelected bureaucrats and agencies have way too much power, while others argue that these agencies are vital for implementing complex laws and adapting to changing circumstances.
That makes sense. It's a complex issue with valid arguments on both sides. It's really fascinating how this case from the 1980s is still relevant to today's political landscape.
It highlights the enduring significance of the separation of powers doctrine.
Absolutely.
INS V. Chavez might have specifically been about the legislative veto.
Right.
But at its core, it was about ensuring that each branch of government operates within its constitutionally defined boundaries.
It's a reminder that our system of checks and balances, while not always perfect, is designed to prevent any one branch from becoming too dominant. But before we get too lost in the big picture, let's circle back to our main character for a moment.
Okay.
What happened to Jagdish Chadha after his case shook the foundations of American governance?
Well, the Supreme Court's decision meant that the House's veto of his deportation suspension was invalid.
Okay.
Paving the way for him to remain in the United States.
So in the end, Chadha got to stay.
He did.
It seems like he inadvertently sparked a legal revolution and personally benefited from the outcome.
It's a classic David and Goliath story, except instead of a giant, Chadha's case brought down a powerful legislative tool and changed the course of legal history.
Wow.
And speaking of legal history, we can't forget about the profound impact INS V. Chadha had on the world of administrative law.
That's right. It wasn't just about the balance of power between Congress and the president. It also had a ripple effect on how agencies operate and how their actions are scrutinized.
Absolutely. We'll delve into those fascinating ripple effects in the final part of our deep dive. Stay tuned to explore how INS V. Chadha continues to shape the way we think about government agencies and their role in our lives.
Welcome back to the deep dive. We've been on quite a journey with INS V. Chadha.
Yeah, it really has been.
Exploring its impact on the balance of power and the relationship between Congress and the president.
It's a case that really gets to the core of how our government works.
Yeah.
And raises questions that are still debated today.
Before the break, we were starting to talk about the ripple effect of Chadha on administrative law.
It's a fascinating area to explore. Chadha forced a significant shift in how government agencies operate and how their actions are scrutinized.
So how did agencies function before Chadha?
Well, prior to Chadha, agencies kind of had a safety net.
Okay.
In the form of the legislative veto. Okay. They knew if they pushed the boundaries too far in their rulemaking or enforcement actions, Congress could always step in and overturn their decisions.
So it was a way for Congress to maintain some control over how laws were actually implemented on the ground.
Exactly. But after Chadha, that safety net was gone, leaving agencies with more autonomy, but also more vulnerability.
It sounds like a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. More freedom to act, but also more potential for backlash if they overstep their bounds.
Exactly. And this had a profound impact on the way agencies approached their work.
Yeah, how so?
They became more cautious, more aware of the need to meticulously follow the law and stay within the limits of their delegated authority.
I imagine it also made them a lot more aware of the courts.
You're right. With the legislative veto off the table, the courts became the primary avenue for challenging agency actions.
Okay.
Chadha led to a surge in judicial review of agency decisions, which introduced a whole new layer of accountability.
That makes sense. If Congress couldn't directly oversee agencies anymore, someone had to fill that void.
Right.
But this increased judicial scrutiny probably had some drawbacks too, right?
It did. While it ensured that agencies were acting lawfully and not infringing on individual rights, it also made the whole regulatory process much slower and more complex.
Uh-huh.
Litigation takes time and resources.
Sure.
So implementing new rules became a lot more difficult and time-consuming.
So we traded efficiency for accountability, a classic dilemma.
It is. It's a trade-off that legal scholars and policymakers are still grappling with today.
And I'm guessing this is where the dead hand problem comes into play.
Exactly.
Okay, the dead hand problem. That sounds a little ominous. What exactly does it refer to?
So it refers to the idea that Congress, by delegating broad authority to agencies, but then limiting its ability to oversee them, has created the situation where outdated laws and regulations can just linger on the books, even when they're no longer effective or relevant.
So laws that should be dead and buried are still shambling around causing problems.
That's a pretty vivid way to put it, but you've got the right idea.
Right,
if Congress can't easily update or revoke outdated laws,
because they have to go through that whole long legislative process, those laws can persist long after their intended purpose has expired.
And that can lead to a lot of unnecessary complexity and confusion for everyone involved.
Absolutely. And it's a problem that sparks a lot of debate.
I bet.
Some people argue for greater congressional oversight to address this issue,
right?
While others believe that agencies need the flexibility to adapt to changing circumstances without being constantly micromanaged by Congress.
It seems like finding that right balance between accountability and efficiency is an ongoing challenge in administrative law.
It really is. And INS v. Chadha, while seemingly just about one man's deportation, really threw a wrench into that balance, forcing us to rethink how we approach this challenge.
It's incredible how this case from the 1980s continues to shape how we think about government agencies and their role in our lives.
It's a testament to the enduring significance of the separation of powers doctrine and the importance of carefully considering the consequences
of even seemingly small procedural changes in the law.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today exploring the constitutional complexities of INS v. Chadha.
We have.
Its impact on the balance of power and its lasting legacy in the world of administrative law.
It's a case that continues to generate debate and discussion.
Absolutely.
Reminding us that law isn't just about abstract principles, but about real people and the real world consequences of legal decisions.
And that's what makes it so fascinating. It's not just a dry legal case study. It's a story about power principles and the constant struggle to find that right balance in our system of governance.
Well said.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into INS v. Chadha. We hope you've gained a new appreciation for this landmark case and its lasting impact.